I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Darn your socks! It's time for Most Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy to News Radio, I'm your TV guide, Brett White. I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined once again by Ben Regev. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Brett.
What up?
Hello.
You are now the most frequented guest on the show.
Wait, I'm the first person to ever come back?
No, you've been on three, because you're on the experiment episode.
Oh, that's right.
The old television.
That's a cheat.
Experiment number one. Yeah, so no, you're tied with... Mujan's been on twice, Winston's been on twice, Matt Little's been on twice, Crystal Beth has been on twice.
It's at the three-timer club is when we get the jackets, right?
Oh, I should do that. don't give me elaborate ideas that are...
All right, wait, make it a five-timer. Like, if you're going to actually make merchandise.
It should be a five-timer jacket, on SNL. But yeah, this is an episode that you had a lot more control over because we're doing a thing that you gave me a thing for, but let's talk about it. Right after I do this week, we're traveling to generally 1954-ish. Rear Window ruled the box office, Mr. Sandman by the Cordettes topped the charts, and Life with Elizabeth aired in syndication. Ben, you must have seen Life with Elizabeth before today.
No.
You'd seen more than I had.
I watched a little bit of this DVD before I gave it to you.
Yeah.
Does this ruin it? I think the episode we watched was in 1953.
Oh, God.
But October, very late.
Okay, whatever. So, yeah, everything's going to sound a little bit more discombobulated than usual because we're doing a show that you can't find out anything about online. We're basically discovering... We're basically, like, uncovering facts while recording this because Life with Elizabeth is a syndicated show starring Betty White. It was her first... like, big TV role. She was the lead of the show and also was a producer on the show. I think she is in the history books as being the first woman to ever produce a TV show. Because she was producer on Life with Elizabeth. It ran in syndication for 65 episodes. It was like two seasons, 60-ish episodes.
On IMDb, it has season one, season two, and season ?
Which is that in 2016? Because it lists it as airing from 1953 to 2016.
Oh, yeah, for 53, so that's like 2016.
Some user on IMDb goofed that up. But it is... It's lost to time in a lot of ways. You found a DVD.
So I was at a dollar store buying stuff at a dollar store. I didn't remember at this point. And I was rooting through the dollar store DVDs, and I saw this... And I know you love Betty White.
You know me.
And I know your mission is to do sitcoms of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And this is pretty early 20th century. And so I thought you would get a kick out of it.
Yeah. Oh, I should have thought to look in the great TV sitcom book for Life with Elizabeth, actually. I should have done that.
Well, while you look it up, I'll say the other thing.
Keep telling the origin story of this DVD that is on my ottoman right now.
Yeah, well, one of the other reasons I thought was interesting and I picked it up is because you'd been talking about the whole idea of A plots and B plots and how, like, the whole, like, having a B plot was kind of like a very recent development. And this is kind of an interesting show because it is a three plot separate plot show.
Like, it's a sketch show.
It's kind of a sketch show. Yeah, it's very, very weird.
Yeah. So here is the here's the entry on Life with Elizabeth in the Big TV Sitcom Book, which listeners to this year's episodes will recognize from the end of the episode when we will read. We will pull from this, do a little bit of a talk at the end. But so its entry on Life with Elizabeth in the 1953 to 1954 season section is just, long before she played bittersweet Sue Ann Nivens on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Betty White starred as Elizabeth White, a sweet, sweet young married. I like when married was just a noun.
She was a married.
She was a young married.
She was married.
She and her TV husband Alvin, played by Del Moore, played a San Francisco couple trying to survive the first difficult years of marriage. In 1955, the Dumont Network canceled both their marriage and this show.
What?
So
that's so hard. Why?
Yeah. Rick Mitz, the author of this, has a tude, and it's pretty great.
I love. It's like, what does that mean? Like, they wrote a letter and was like, the show has been canceled. And also,
you can't
the
see
couple's
other.
Been broken up.
Like, by the
for
way.
Fans who were curious, they're no longer married.
Fuck them. So I guess it was also maybe on the Dumont Network, or maybe that was... So the Dumont Network was the fourth network that failed early on.
Oh.
We talked about this a lot in, I think, the I Love Lucy episode that I did with Ramsey S.,
mm-hmm.
Where the, maybe even an earlier one, the Dumont was the fourth network, and it was most notable for having, I think, the Honeymooners. It aired on Dumont, and Honeymooners is the only show that survived from Dumont Network. Mm-hmm. But Wikipedia says this aired in syndication, and syndication was its undoing, because even though it only ran for 30 episodes? Let me look that. Let me get the Wikipedia page pulled up, because
30 episodes is IMDb.
Yeah, Life with Elizabeth. 65. So yeah, two seasons, 65 episodes. That makes sense, because 65 is the number that cartoons shoot for.
Uh-huh.
And cartoons are always like, it's so that you could run it 5 days a week for 12 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? It's 5 times 12 is 65? No, 5 times 13 is 65.
Yes.
Oh, math. So yeah, it ran for 65 episodes. Only IMDb only has 30 of them cataloged. We don't have air dates for any of them, or even really titles. There are some titles on there.
So you don't trust the one. The one that we watched is on IMDb.
What does it say?
It just says Shutterbug Alvin / Honeymoon's Over / Sick Bay.
Yep.
October 28th, 1953.
Oh, man, I wish I had known that beforehand. But again, the DVD I have has no information about the episodes. We watched, as far as we know, episode 2. That's what we thought it was.
Two from the collection, yes. Fourth, if IMDb is correct, this is the fourth episode.
Fourth episode, second of the... So the DVD itself is just one of those... the DVDs you would find at the dollar store where it's everything's public domain.
It wouldn't be, though.
Yeah, this is public domain.
No, it's not.
Yes, it says, on again on Wikipedia, here is the episode where I just read Wikipedia into the microphone. So, because this blah, 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 since the series entered the public domain and has been released in volumes of budget DVD releases, that's all it says.
Hmm.
It's over 50 years old, so...
Yeah, but that's
And also the network that was unfolded, so I'm sure, like, the rights are just kind of...
Well, so that's nebulous. The thing. It might be the rights are nebulous, but it wouldn't actually fall out of copyright. Because Steamboat Willie is the metric for what's under copyright, because every time it comes close to expiring, Disney arrives in Washington with bags of money, and the law changes. So
does that only apply to Disney stuff, or? Like, or is everything falling to the
ground? No. They extend the duration of copyright. But I don't know. It gets confusing, and it's probably not interesting, and we probably shouldn't just be guessing.
Well, no, but like,
I'd be happy to nerd out and look that up. Because
please get all your legal advice from this podcast.
Public domain is actually kind of weird, because basically things are copyrighted by default when they're created. Like, there's a lot of, like, mythology that says you have to, like, mail a thing to yourself so it gets a postmark or whatever. You don't have to do any of that. Once you create something, by default, you own it if it is copyrightable. You know, ultimately you have to, like, defend it in court if you really care, but, like, it's copyrighted by default. And then the law basically says after after some set amount of time, which is usually kind of depending on the work.
It used to be 50 years, but now it's not.
It's life of creator plus some amount of time.
Okay.
So, yeah, and it used to be, I remember it was extended in the late 90s because I was in high school and was very wrapped up in the case that went to the Supreme Court. But...
yeah, so that's the origin of this weird DVD that we watched this on. We're really diving into the deep end. So let's get into... So cue the harp music. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about Life with Elizabeth. It was written by We Have No Idea and directed by We Have No Idea. And Ben just told us the title of the episode, so...
Well, there's writers...
What do you have on there?
On IMDb, it's written by George Tibbles and Milt Kahn.
Okay, good.
We're credited.
George Tibbles is also the creator of the show, so that makes sense.
Directed by Duke Goldstone.
Ooh. So we're piecing together what we know about the show together in tandem while we're doing the show. So this is kind of like...
Well, here's...
This is testing to see how strong my podcast format is.
Let's disappoint the people who only listen to hear about the... metadata.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the actual show.
Yeah. So the whole reason they'll get this show, which the DVD box clearly states is, it's great fun, great laughs, Betty White. That's why you get it, is for Betty White. And if you're wanting to see some old Betty White, well, this is where you go.
That, basically. Yeah, right? I mean, like, it was pretty good. And she was the star.
And I mean, she is the star. She produced it. Star. Also great in it. As good as one can be in it. So let's talk about the episode. As we said, it's three, like, 7 to 8 minute sketches, essentially, segments, that is introduced by a narrator. Was it Jack Nars? What's his name?
Yeah, Jack Nars is the name.
I don't think he says, he doesn't say his name.
Yeah. No, it's like, I have to wonder if... young Rod Serling saw this
and
cribbed this for Twilight Zone. Because it is a guy in a suit who's
in front
like...
of a curtain, like, as we find out at the end of the show, talking to an audience. Because the camera cuts to show the audience at the end of it. So I was like, that's so wild. This is basically like an SNL kind of thing. I mean, Betty White even comes out at the end to say goodbye.
What was crazy about that was he was like... at the very end, he's like, hey, everyone, stay tuned... like. You assume there are commercials there, right?
Yeah.
So he's like...
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. And in just a moment, Betty White will return to say goodbye. And now here to say goodbye to you is the lovely star of our show, Betty White.
And thank you, everybody. Thank you. Come on back and see us again, will you? And until next time, once more, goodbye, everybody.
And that's the end.
Like, and then it cuts the audience.
It's not even like a final thought or something. Like,
no, yeah.
Some quote or something. It's just like, hey, I came out. Goodbye.
Like, it's like, you know, in 1953, viewers did not have object permanence. Like, they're like trying to assure them, this is Betty White. Betty White is playing a character named Elizabeth. Like, they're very... Which, if you look at what this is, which is a sitcom in like one of the earliest years of sitcoms, it makes me wonder... if there was, like, you know, roads in a snowy wood or whatever. And so, like, there's, like, the inciting sitcom incident, which I want to watch the first sitcom. And so at this point, like, I Love Lucy is in season one or two. So it's going that way. I Love Lucy, we still recognize as a sitcom. Like, we can see I Love Lucy and map it onto shows that still air today. Like, it's still very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this, which is also a sitcom, but it's three truncated, like, sketches with a host. And there's no, like, overarching plot. There's no, like, stakes. Theoretically, you would assume there's probably no continuity from episode to episode, really. Like, there's probably not, like, ongoing plot lines. Because there aren't even ongoing plot lines from sketch to sketch. It even jumps around in time. Because the second one, they say, like, takes place in the first 3 months of their marriage.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
They make a big deal out of calling her Elizabeth.
Yes, and she's like, what? So it's very interesting to see, like, was there a divert point or whatever where sitcoms could have gone in this direction. Did this show work in 1953 because people did not really like the what a sitcom was not set in stone yet. They could just kind of do whatever. Like, TV was still young. It was like, oh, it's people standing on a TV and talking to us with sound. Ooh, like.
Well, I think so. I don't know a ton about sort of early 20th century stage shows and vaudeville, right? But vaudeville's, yeah, like, that's the... That's what informed a lot of... Yes. Basically, right, you start with, like, oh, okay, we have this way to, like, send pictures. What do we do? Well, we do what we did on stage, and yeah, we just do it in front of the camera instead. And
that's what this really looks like.
Yeah, this felt very much like that, like stage kind of acts.
Yeah, and it makes I Love Lucy. We're going to be bringing up I Love Lucy a lot, I'm assuming, because that's my main point of comparison, and also their contemporaries. It's also so wacky to think of Betty White as a contemporary of Lucille Ball. That's the other, like, people don't realize Betty White is one of the first people that was ever put on television. Like, and she was a radio star before that. She goes that far back. I mean, she's in her 90s now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. So it is interesting to see just how... This makes I Love Lucy seem even more radical and revolutionary than I've hyped it up as being. For one thing, as I talked about in the episode with Ramsey, I do believe, from like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I Love Lucy was shot on film. And so when you watch I Love Lucy on like Hulu, it still looks comparatively high def. Like, mm-hmm, it looks nice. Whereas this is, I'm assuming, probably a kinescope, which is when they would have like the monitor on set playing back the live feedback, and they had a camera on the monitor recording it.
Right.
So that's because it doesn't look good. Like, it's very scratchy, and like, it also might be just like, no one was taking care of Life with Elizabeth. Even if it was on film, it's probably degraded, and ain't no one going in there and dusting it off.
Yeah, no, this definitely isn't... This is not the Criterion version of Life with Elizabeth.
6 numbered episodes with no titles and no credits.
It was good, though. It wasn't distracting.
No. So, yeah, no, it was still totally, like, watchable. I mean, it looked as good as, like, an episode of Webster. Dunk on Webster.
I wonder, though, now that you mention it, that maybe the reason we have these 6 episodes as opposed to any others are that they were, like, in the best condition.
Oh, maybe. That might be why they chose them. Because a lot of those things are just lost. Mm. Like, all the Maury Amsterdam show is lost, which is heartbreaking. Mm. So, let's talk... The first sketch, after we get, like, the harp intro, which is just hands playing a harp. That's the theme song. It's just some harp,
mm-hmm,
jingle-jangling. That's what harps do. They jingle-jangle. Then we have Jack Nars saying, like, here they are. Here's an incident.
For our first incident in the life of Elizabeth, why don't we see what she and Alvin are doing at this very moment?
Yeah, they're incidents.
I like that they're not called sketches. They're called incidents. Which makes it sound like there's like a toxic spill that Elizabeth and Alvin are going to be cleaning up or something. They're going to investigate Thor's hammer or something. So the first one is what was called like Shutterbug Alvin or Alvin the Shutterbug.
Yeah.
It's just there's a competition in the magazine for taking photos.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's just like taking a bunch of photos. That's it.
That's basically it.
Taking it.
Yeah, no, and it felt very much like a stage act, and that the whole thing was, the thing motivating it is he's taking photos for some magazine competition or something like that, and he was like, they have a whole bunch of categories, and his plan is to enter every category.
Yeah.
Which is a nice excuse for doing a whole bunch of different, he's taking, like, Whistler profile photos
of
her first.
Of Liz darning socks.
You're right. And then there's photo, and then he's like, I'll do still life, and I'm trying to do a candid shot, and whatever. And so it's like, it just motivates, like, them moving around the space, mm-hmm, and doing different things.
That weird one room.
And trying to set up jokes.
That, like, the set is just a room. Like, and it has, like, a table
weird
in it.
It was, like, a room in a house, right?
Yeah, well, it seems like it's the kind of room that would be just off of, like, a patio or something, like an indoor. Hmm. But it's, like, it had, like, a chair, was there a door, and then it had, like, a table. It was too small to be a living room, but it had, like, it was not noticeably a kitchen or a bedroom.
It could have just been the end of the living room. It was notably... Wait, was it a different room? It was different rooms each incident.
Yeah, each incident was in a different room. And I can't really map how they would all connect. There's no sense of space. But that's all stuff that I Love Lucy, I guess, pioneered in a way. So, yeah, it's just them doing a whole bunch of different camera things. I mean, he gets out... There's nothing really to talk about. It's the thing I'm discovering.
Nothing to talk about?
I mean, no. In this one, he's just taking a bunch of pictures. It's funny. I'm trying to think of... Were there any... I wrote that Liz is feeling herself. Because this is her...
Liz is feeling herself.
Elizabeth.
Yeah,
is feeling herself. Okay. But she, like, Betty White, her entire character is just, like, making jokes and then laughing at them. Like, she's feeling herself. She thinks she is hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting to me.
Yeah, no,
because that's not really what sitcom characters do. They'll say a joke and, like, let it land, but she's, like, there to laugh along with the audience.
No, in fact, I thought, like, there was something really unusual about it. It was a scene between two people who were doing something kind of mundane, and the jokes were, like, they were, like, she was making jokes and was like, haha, I made a joke.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I feel like, what's sort of a standard sitcom thing now is that you have people maybe doing crazier things, or if nothing else, like, they'll say the jokes, but within the scene, they're not
funny.
It's not a joke.
No one's laughing at it.
It's not that it's not funny, right? But it's sort of like, in a sort of contemporary show, I'd say something clever, and the audience would laugh, or the laugh track would go, but no one in the scene was, like, reacting like someone told a joke.
Yeah.
But this felt more like real people hanging out, in the sense that, like, she said something, and...
He would always, like, roll his eyes, or, like, he would have a comeback for her.
Like, the most perfect thing that just felt so alien, but, like... honestly seemed more real, was like in the third one where he's got Novocaine, or he's like, right, his face is kind of numb because he's back from the dentist and he's had the Novocaine, and he's like, I'm sorry, I didn't feel your kiss.
Hi, Mrs. Kittredge.
How are you?
Well, don't I get my kiss?
Sweetheart, I just kissed you. Alvin, what happened to your face?
Oh, no wonder I didn't feel your kiss. I'm dead from the neck up.
I know that, honey, but what happened to your face?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm only teasing.
And actually, that's sweet, right? That's like kind of what would actually happen.
Exactly.
If you were joking around.
I wrote that line down because, like, that was maybe like the coolest line of the entire show.
Yeah?
It was her, like, delivery of that. It was very Betty White. There's a moment where he's trying to take photos of her, and every time he, like, goes behind the camera, she makes a face at him. And she does it three times, and he finally, like, pops back up, and he catches her making the face. He thinks there's something wrong with, like, the viewfinder or whatever. It's also funny, because you're seeing, I don't think, like, he doesn't use cameras, because he has both one mounted on a tripod and then another handheld, right? He's using two, or is he putting it back on and off?
Oh, I think he was putting it on the tripod.
But he was taking so many photos from, like, I don't know, maybe a foot from her face. I was like, he's going to get that film back, and it's all just going to be, like, close-ups of, like, half of a face. Maybe that's what the magazine wants. He wasn't, like, there was not a believable amount of distance. I questioned the photography work on it.
Well, I mean, for a guy who's like, I read in a magazine that I can enter this contest.
Yeah.
Like, so I decided today I was going to take the photos. I mean, that was realistic in that sense.
Yeah. The thing ends with him, like, getting a glass top coffee table, and he lays under it. At first I was like, is he going to be doing, like, the first ever upskirt shot? Like, is that what he's going to trick her into doing?
Oh, boo.
I know, I don't want that. But the whole sketch up to that point has been him tricking her and while, like, to getting photos of her, candid photos.
Right.
Like, hey, go pick up that stuff, and then taking a photo of her picking something up and, like, sneaking around getting a photo. So I was like, oh god, why is he under a glass coffee table? She's wearing a skirt, it's gonna be bad. And now he just wants to take a photo of a fly when it lands on the coffee table.
Yeah. Which, like, that was funny by itself. For it's like, he's like, I'm gonna wait down here for a fly to land. And then she's like, I'm gonna go open the door.
Maybe I better open the screen doors and let some in.
Elizabeth, don't be ridiculous. Elizabeth, don't let any flies in this house. We've got enough. Elizabeth, come back here. We've got enough flies.
Like, this level of hygiene where it's like, there's... I guess that's one of the things, right? Like, people don't think about, like, oh, in the 50s, yeah, you would just have a certain number of flies,
just
I guess.
Living around.
Like, there used to be more flies back then, but that's not one of the things people talk about when they say good old days.
I haven't had a fly in my apartment in a very long time.
I can't say that I haven't in a long time, but I've definitely not ever thought that, like, I want to, like, I've never had so many that I'm like, I'm going to wait for one to land here and then be like, oh, we don't need any more. We have plenty.
We've got plenty of room. But there's a really, she then goes and gets, like, a can of Cool Whip, right? And, like, sprays it on the thing. Whipped cream.
Yeah.
Which is fun. That was a fun, like, physical thing. And also, I was like, oh, they had aerosol cans at that point. Okay. Yeah. It's another thing of watching a 50s show is like, I actually don't know what is anachronistic or like what they had back then. So it's like, cool, I now know they had those in 1953.
Do you think, to go back to the candid shot thing, did that read as, like, I don't know, racy to you? Like he was trying to get a shot of her butt, or did you?
Well, that's what I kept expecting, because that's what a show would be like now. Like, bend over and then he'll like get a, you know, picture of her boobs hanging out or whatever. But he never got those. He just literally wanted to get photos of her like moving.
Yeah, like it did seem kind of like a stage thing, or like just an excuse to sort of have people move around and be in poses, right?
I mean, cameras might have been so newly introduced into like home life that maybe it wasn't as prevalent to like take dirty photos of people against their will.
No, here's the thing, right? Especially in 1954, I don't think that would be right. This is like the air, like that would just not even be.
Wouldn't even come across their brain.
Yeah, or at least like that's not what you're trying to, like, especially this show wasn't even trying to be titillating, right?
Oh no, exactly. Like. Like modern shows would definitely be going that route, and we're watching with a modern point of view, so I was always waiting for them to make that joke, but then like the show is not even attempting to make those jokes. Those jokes are not even on the writer's radar, because why would they be? That's tasteless, like that's rude, you know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no.
So it's weird watching a show that is just like not even thinking about the thing you're worried about.
Yeah, I think it just amounts to Alvin not really knowing what makes a good candid shot.
No, yeah.
Just waiting for someone to be
picking up a flashbulb. Yeah. It's such a magazine worthy photos of grapefruit in bowl. And then the thing ends with him, like, first of all, for some reason they have a whole lot of just water glasses just on a table. They have at least three.
Well, I mean, it's all props for the
oh yeah, but just like in the reality of life with Elizabeth, Alvin and Elizabeth need three glasses of half. So anyway, she holds both in her hands, and then he puts like another one.
That's a good trick.
Yeah.
No, what usually you do is you dare you say to somebody that you can like put down these glasses of water where they can't move them. And they're like, what do you do? Of course I can. And then you put the glasses on top of their hands.
Yeah.
And then they can't move the... If they move their hands, they knock over the glasses of water.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting variation, because she was standing up. So she had one glass in each hand. And then he basically pinned the other... If you hold your hands... I guess we got to describe this, right? You hold your hands out vertically... hold your hands out and you sort of... pinch the third glass in between your arms.
Yeah.
Is what he did.
It was a good load. That was the button.
Yeah.
And then it ended with the show's catchphrase, which I looked up and that is what it is the announcer, because there's a lot of fourth wall breaking. The announcer, like, Alvin leaves, and Elizabeth is standing there with all the water, and the announcer from off stage is like, Elizabeth,
aren't you ashamed?
And then she, like a little stinker, like, like shakes her head. No, I'm not. And apparently that's how she ends a lot of the,
yeah, it wasn't incidents. All, the other two didn't end.
The other two did not, but the Wikipedia notes, that's like a thing she does in every episode.
Yeah. That feels like a thing that doesn't sound right to me.
It sounds way too judgy. It's like, what should she be ashamed of? She was just like having a good time with her husband.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right. The idea is that like he was taking photos and she was like kind of,
being a little stinker.
Yeah, but like in that particular one, not to much of an extreme, and it ends with him playing a prank on her.
Yeah, not to be ashamed. Jeez. So then we get the second one, which is the one. Is this like them, her helping him get ready for work, like her doing all of her morning chores while he goes off to work?
Well, the theme is this is right after the honeymoon.
Yes, when the honeymoon ends.
When the what was it? It's like when you. When the husband starts to notice the burnt toast.
When the bloom goes off the rose or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's like...
And then, yeah, the joke was she's...
Everything's like, horrible.
Bad at... Well, specifically, it's like...
everything's
bad,
wet.
Bad at... Yeah, basically,
everything's wet is the first one.
Well, she ironed his shirt, but it was still wet.
Yeah.
And then she made... the socks were still wet because the heater wasn't on.
I was not into seeing 1953 wet socks. A close-up of them on the feet. It just looked like a fucking like boggy creek monster. Like, it was gross.
It was not that bad.
I don't like... wet. Don't like, I don't like wet socks.
Wet feet?
No, like wet feet are... Like, wet bare feet are fine. But like, wet socks... It's just, like, so gross to me.
It's not a good feeling. It is
it's
funny
not
to
a
think
good feeling.
He took the socks off the radiator. They were still wet. And then put them on. And then squished around in them.
Yeah,
like
he did.
Huh. Right. What else? But then she.
I noted that Liz's mom is also feeling herself in this. Because she's like, oh, God, I can't remember what the joke. But she gets in a burn on Al. By, like, via
his
phone.
His collar.
He says to tell you the collar's still damp, too. Mama.
What'd she say?
She says that's because you're still wet behind the ears.
Boom! Man, that's where Elizabeth gets it from.
These are all really great, like, 1950s housewife burns.
Now, it's at this point that I noted this is a show about nothing. All three of these bits are about nothing. They're very, like, and that's not a bad thing,
yeah.
As Seinfeld taught us, but also Seinfeld wasn't an original idea, because this was also about nothing, and they knew it.
Oh.
No, I don't think that's true. But yeah, like, the whole thing of this one is just hijinks while getting Alvy, I keep calling him Alvy, Alvin, is going off to work. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the end bit of, like, pour me some black coffee, and she pours it, and it's just water. Or it's a clear liquid. I'm assuming it's like water she forgot to...
Yeah, she said she forgot to put the heat on.
Yeah,
it.
That's fun. That's a, like, and then, yeah.
No, that wasn't the end of that bit.
No, the end...
The end was a twist.
Oh, wait, what was... Oh, yes, the end of it was a twist. It was a Twilight Zone. Rod Serling
it
really...
It was a Twilight Zone.
Rod's... Because they...
Because he's late for work and he hasn't had breakfast because nothing's prepared and he's ready to go. And he needs a tie and then... She goes next door. All the ties are the cleaner. She goes next door to get a tie. And she comes back. And he's like, where are the tie?
And then she's like, the neighbors were just leaving for church. And then she picks up a newspaper. It's actually Sunday. And then they take off their faces and they're alien pigs.
Well, except for that part. Actually, though, the newspaper... I didn't even think about it at the time. The newspaper's kind of interesting. Because it's like... That wasn't... Like, it wouldn't be necessary, right? It's just, like, a visual thing to be, like, proof. Like, what does it mean to show somebody the date? It means to hold up a newspaper.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the twist ending of that one. Oh, I also noted that apparently his nickname for her is Lamsey. He calls her Lamsey at one point. That's an extreme nickname, I would say. I don't like that.
You don't like
I don't like Lamsey.
You know what? That's nicknames are not about...
They're not about me. They're not about my judging. I don't want my husband calling me Lamsey. I'll say that.
Well,
that,
you're not. I don't think you will.
Then ask for it. I don't want it. So the third sketch is. I feel like this one might be my favorite of the three.
They were all very different. I wrote down for the last one: feel no evil, see no evil, hear no evil.
Yeah, basically that's it.
Right. So you had three characters, which each had an impairment. Alvin gets credit for being the only one who was not in denial.
Yeah,
about it.
He knew that he had just gotten back from the... But he knew that he had it, but he still
he
was doing it.
Well, yeah, he still was doing the comedy. But like
he was acknowledging, yes, I cannot feel anything in my face. But then he still thought everything he was doing with his face was totally, right.
So Alvin's on some real powerful Novocaine, which not only numbs your pain receptors, but also messes with your proprioception so that you can't hold up a phone and aim it right at your face.
Yep.
Which... Like, maybe Novocaine was, like, super strong in the 50s.
Really hallucinogenic.
It's like...
yeah.
Psychotropic Novocaine.
Yeah.
And then...
My favorite band.
Then special guest, Mrs. Skinridge.
Chloe Skinridge!
Who had just come from the doctor and had
eye
drops. So
they
she couldn't see.
Dilated as hell. She couldn't see.
And then...
This is the most far-fetched one, I thought. It's because Chloe comes over, she's like, where's Elizabeth? And he's like, oh, she won a contest to go flying in an airplane.
And that's how her hearing is kind of messed up.
Yeah, because she comes back, and they, like, talk for a little bit, and they're like, did it mess with your ears? And she's like, no, I'm fine. Can you answer the phone? And I'm like, that's what's like, oh, okay, so her hearing's messed up. That's what...
That was actually interesting that, like, Mrs. Like, they're like, 30,000 feet, didn't that, like, mess with your ears? And then Mrs. Selfridge is like, my golly, my ears start ringing when I just go up a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
And they're all like, ha ha ha. But that, and like, at the time it was like, well, that's real dumb. And they're laughing a lot for not really that good of a joke. Is that even a joke? And no, and that turns out to be like the thing to inform. That's a crucial exposition. Because then, like, yeah, then Elizabeth is like hearing the phone ring. Or the kettle, or other things.
Yeah, or everything.
Time.
And I feel I loved Betty White's performance in this one. Because I think that she was... Betty White is so fucking good. that she was doing so much of still playing high status mm-hmm. while doing, like, all the low status jokes along with... Because, like, Chloe Skinridge is old as hell. Like, she's... I was thinking in my head, like, this actress was probably born in the 1870s, you know, like 1880s. Ooh. This is 1953. She looks at least minimum 70.
Can we find that out?
Maybe. So it's like, she looks so old. So therefore, there's like a level of, like, she's playing like that typical, like, old woman that you, like, pity a little. Like, the jokes are in pity.
She's a little bit younger than you thought.
Okay, 1889. Ms.
Loewy Bridge was born on October 16th, 1889.
1889.
In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA.
Cool. And then Alvin is playing, he's also very high status, but he's just, like, not as engaging of a performer, I guess. Like, he's fine. But Betty White is doing, she's doing double duty of, like, she's coming in and she's, like, trying, she's also, like, playing high status to the other two of, like, helping them, like, you know, calling out everything they're doing wrong. And then she's also sneaking in all these little, like, can you get the phone? It's, like, really a layered thing that I think is really cool.
Yeah.
She's, like, she's throwing off all of her low status jokes in a high status voice, which is really cool.
Yeah. No, that was fun because you had the three people. That was, like, a good, there was just a lot of activity, right? Because, like, at any given moment, one of them is, like, one of them is doing the thing. Mrs. Skinner is, like, picking up the desk thing and thinking it's the phone. Or actually, when the coffee came out, right, that was perfect, where it's like, pour the sugar, take the thing away from her.
Yeah.
Take the thing. That, like,
it was a lot like that improv.
It lent itself to, like, a lot of busy, like, activity, which is fun to watch.
It was a lot like that improv game of, like, sit down, lean, and stand up, where, like, one person has to be sitting, leaning, or standing at any point.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, when the coffee came out, I said earlier, this is a very low-stakes show. When the hot coffee came out, I was having an internal, like, freak out. Because I hate hot beverages.
I think, like, Adult Swim has, like, ruined you. Like, you're bracing yourself for the Adult Swim version of
this. Or, like, the Mick or something, like, where I'm, like, they're all like, burn themselves.
It's, like, super... No, that's the thing, right? Where it's, like, you have, like, the first half of it is, like, super pleasant and low-key. And then all of a sudden, something horrific happens.
Yeah. It's the Mick on Fox. Everyone should watch the Mick. It's great.
But this is 1953.
And they don't do that. Like, there's no, like, scalding tongue jokes or anything.
No.
Because I was expecting, like, you're bringing out a hot beverage and people cannot see or hear or feel anything. I was, like, expecting him to start just downing coffee and it, like, scalding.
Yeah, I was actually expecting him to just sort of, like, blah, blah, blah everywhere. And it didn't really do that. It was it was mostly about him failing to aim it.
Aim it, yeah. And then the blind person or Miss Self Skinridge was just, like, spoonfuls of sugar just, like, on the lap or whatever. Like, it's all
it was, like, in that, like, planter or something.
Yeah.
She was drinking out of that. No, that was fun.
It was so dumb, but it's in a good way. Like, I like that so dumb stuff.
Yeah.
Then... Well, I was going to say, like, the end of the episode ends, like we said earlier, with, like, more fourth wall breaking.
Hey! Say goodbye to the people.
Goodbye everybody. Can you imagine when she...
Stop laughing for a second and say goodnight to everybody. Yeah. Oh, they're like, oh, sorry. Like,
yeah. And then, yeah, everything ends. So, like, my overall note for the thing was, like, it's trying not to sound like an asshole or anything. I was just bored.
You were bored? Did you enjoy it at all?
As a curiosity, I think it is fascinating, especially to see what a sitcom could have been, like, what it also was in 1953, because
mm-hmm.
because we started really quickly hammering down rules. I Love Lucy set this ground rule, like, it set the foundation, and then the Dick Van Dyke Show, like, added on more stuff to it. And then, like, it's like the sitcoms we have now are these, like, very clear. There's a lineage you can trace back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, it's almost like a, what, Cro-Magnon? Like, it's like, Neanderthal. It's like the normal lineage of people. And then there's this other offshoot that was, like, there at the same time, but they kind of died off.
I don't know, though. It's not, because
but this became different things. This became, like, more sketch comedy.
This was totally sketches. I mean, it had the feeling of the sketches you would see in a variety show.
Right.
Right? It was just this weird, like, the thing that makes it. From that end, if you were doing a show, if you were doing a podcast about sketch comedy shows, right?
You wouldn't do
and
this.
You watch this, right? You'd say, oh, this is this weird sketch comedy show
where you have
the same characters each time.
Because that is the thing that
and
clues
it's sort
it,
of vaguely like a sitcom.
That's the thing that makes it feel more like a sitcom is the fact that it is ostensibly about, like, well, it's about this married couple and, like, the premise on Wikipedia is that the first years of their marriage.
Yeah.
And I guess since it only lasted three, and then they canceled the show and the marriage, so, like, you know, it doesn't end well.
What was it again? They, like...
Dumont canceled the network, the show, and the marriage.
I liked it a lot. I don't know, I feel like the whole
thing... I don't think it's bad at all.
Yeah. No, it was very aggressively pleasant.
Yeah.
Right? Or from the harp at the beginning.
Yeah, what's the harp at the end?
The mood. The joke, like, none of the jokes. Actually, the weird, it had this, like, there was kind of a mean edge. Actually, again, it's like a language thing, right? Like, in the first one,
yeah.
Calvin calls her, just straight up, is like, you're an idiot. And then,
oh, right,
but
yeah.
Then she's like, well, I have to talk like an idiot, so you'll understand me.
Right.
And then they're all smiles about it. And it doesn't feel, like, it's kind of jarring that word feels like a more harsh insult. And I don't know, maybe it wasn't as much. But, like,
yeah.
Actually, I gotta, also, the other thing is, as it went on, I was kind of digging Alvin more. Because at first he's like, kind of he's dull and or whatever, right? He's like,
he's really frumpy in the first one.
He's frumpy and he doesn't laugh much. Yeah, and he was a really good straight man foil for her. And honestly, I think if he was like also laughing along, then maybe as you watch the show, yes. You just feel. Like, I really hate this obnoxious couple that's, like, sitting next to me and won't shut up at the Starbucks, right? Like the fact that, like, she, Elizabeth is making the jokes and giggling to herself, and Alvin is just sort of like, ugh, just let me take these photos. But he's not mean. Like, I think, actually, what's interesting, like, the second one, right, with the
getting
newspaper,
ready for
work, yeah, but with the newspaper thing, right? So you had real stakes there, which is, like, he's trying to get to work, and he's late,
yeah.
And everything's gone wrong. And, like, I guess the point is, like, the other Dumont show, right, is where that would end with Ralph Cramden being like, I'm going to...
Punch you in the face.
One of these days, I'm going to punch you in the face, right?
Oh,
and, like, yeah. that was actually kind of a nice move at the end to, like, just deflate the whole thing.
I know, they hug.
Like, oh, it's...
Right, they're like, oh,
she's like,
great.
It's Sunday, and it's like, oh, okay.
It ends
whatever.
With them laughing, which
yeah,
is really sweet.
Which is really nice. And I think that's actually, like, I think a key thing of the show, right, which is that, like, they set it up for him to get really... In the first one, too, the third one, they have a third person, so it messes it up. But in both of them, actually, Alvin is aggravated and not really, like, she's joking around.
Yeah.
And he's, like, you know, he doesn't seem like he's losing his temper, but he'd have every right to be. And in the very end, it, like, deflates it. And, like, so in the second one, the newspaper is Sunday. You don't have to go to work. Ha ha. Okay. All this, you know.
We're good.
Even the first one, right, he gets back at her by pulling a prank and, like, having her hold the glasses and leaves. So, like, he gets his come up, you know, he gets to do that and go. So I actually think, yeah, even though he's not... It's that thing where it's like, oh, yeah, he's, like, you don't want to like him because he's the old stick in the mud.
But he's a good complimentary energy.
Yeah. I think they have a really good act together.
Do we want to talk... I mean, like, of course, we should talk about Betty White... If you want to address your Betty White elephant in the room.
What elephant?
You said that you've not really seen much of her, so therefore might
I
not.
Just feel like everyone gushes about her, and I'm like, eh, she's nice.
So here...
But I don't think it's bad. I just said, Brett, I'm not that crazy. I don't know, I feel like bad that I'm taking space away from someone who would be super, super excited to be here.
No. That's well, you all. Gave me
but
the DVD.
I do not dislike her by any means. She's great. She's fantastic.
No, right. But you've never seen her on Mary Tyler Moore or Match Game.
No.
But you have seen her in Life with Elizabeth. So you have a one up on a lot of other Betty White fans, I would say.
Yeah.
Because this is not a show that is widely seen.
Well, yeah. I'm really into her early stuff. I think,
right.
Like,
really.
After she. Yeah. You know.
The thing that I think is so great about her, which you can see in this, is she's really, really good at playing every type of character. She's one of the most versatile comedic actors I've ever seen. And the proof is all there in these, like, iconic TV shows. Like, on this, she's playing a very, like, witty housewife.
Yeah.
Like, very on the ball, loves a good one-liner, you know. She's that. On Mary Tyler Moore Show, they cast her as basically a fucking, like, a vixen. Mm-hmm. She is kind of a sociopath sex fiend.
Okay.
On Mary Tyler Moore Show, she's Sue Ann Nivens, the happy homemaker. And she comes into every scene, reads everyone for filth, flirts with Lou Grant like nobody's business, and then, like, takes another man home. And that's her... It's so great. And then on Golden Girls, she's... neither of those. She's, like, sweet, naive, dim-witted, and, like, wholesome to a T. So she has these... The fact that she can play all these roles, and I think the super interesting in between Mary Tyler Moore and Golden Girls is when they were casting Golden Girls, they had her read for Blanche. They had her cast as Blanche, because that's the character she played on Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Rue McClanahan cast as Rose, because she played naive and sweet on Maude.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did, like, the reading, Betty and Rue were like, we kind of want to trade, because we don't ever get to play those characters. And now, when you think about Betty White and Rue McClanahan, you think of them as, like, Betty White is, like, naive and sweet, and Rue McClanahan. It's so interesting to me that they are such great actors that they could change the public perception of what they were able to do, like, so thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
Usually actors get boxed in into, like, one thing you know them, like, Tom Cruise runs.
Yeah.
He's the running Scientologist. And that's why I love Betty White, is that every single time she's given a chance, she is so game to reintroduce herself and, like, take on... I mean, she was also on Hot in Cleveland, a show that I haven't seen enough of, so I actually don't know what character she played on there. I bet it was probably super different than the other ones. Yeah, so, the trivia section.
Betty White in Life with Elizabeth.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So the ranking, so again, this is all for 1954, because I thought this episode was for 1954, whatever. So the top five shows of 1954 were, number five, The Toast of the Town.
Okay.
Four, You Bet Your Life.
Oh.
Three, Dragnet.
Okay.
Two, The Jackie Gleason Show. And number one was I Love Lucy. This show, I don't know what the ratings were, because it was either on Dumont or syndicated, and so if it wasn't in the top 30, it was not in the top 30. Or if it was syndicated, which is what Wikipedia says, I don't know if they could record syndicated ratings back then. I mean, it would be a lot of math.
Well, when did Nielsen start doing the diary?
No, Nielsen's doing it, because I think these are Nielsen ratings.
Okay.
So I guess, I don't know.
Yeah, but they probably wouldn't.
Yeah,
if they're not even bothering to.
So, on IMDb, 152 users rated the entire series a 7.2. Do you think that's too high? Would you go lower?
Well, having not seen the entire series...
Yeah, this is a harder one. I don't know. It's a you gotta put it in the context.
Yeah, how do you judge every show against others? It's ridiculous. But yeah. I think... No, I don't know. I enjoyed it for what it was, and it was very... aggressively pleasant. You know what? This has the potential to knock from its pedestal the Great British Baking Show the show that everyone says is really nice to watch when you really just want something soothing. Probably not, actually, now that I think about it. But like, but I would say, yeah, if you're really into the Great British Baking Show, because you want to watch something that's not too controversial and very pleasant, I would say, yeah.
So
7 stars at least for that
good
category.
So the reason that no one has seen this show and that it fell off of the radar is because, and this is me reading from Wikipedia again, after 65 episodes, the series production company Guild Films chose to cancel the series. While the series was still popular with audiences, Guild Films decided that too many new episodes of Life with Elizabeth would oversaturate secondary markets, thus making the series less profitable in second-run syndication. So the show was too successful to continue in a weird, like...
Wait, do you understand that? Because I'm not sure I do.
Well, I think back then... Well, there's a...
What was the bit about second run syndication? What does that mean?
Well, like, so, you know, when a show is done, when it, like, the Magic 100, you know, later on, they would realize 100 episodes is what they wanted to hit.
Yeah.
They can then sell it to secondary syndicate and keep it going.
So wait, so primary syndication is like Star Trek Next Generation,
yeah,
where it's,
yeah,
like, it's not on a network to start with. It starts in syndication.
Yeah.
But it's like one episode a week.
Yeah.
And then secondary syndication is when it's like...
Five nights a week.
Five nights, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but at the time, I feel like they were operating under that scarcity rule of like, you know, like if a comic book, you know, a comic book sells 12 million copies and everyone's like, ooh, it must be worth a lot. And it's like, well, actually, no, because the more of something there is, the less valuable it is.
Yeah. If you, yeah.
So I think that back then they thought that, no, we shouldn't have so many. Cancel it. It'll make it, people will get tired of it.
Maybe.
It makes no sense.
Hmm.
Because the fact that they say, like, the show was still successful, and it did 65 episodes, and they were like, nah, we're good. Weird. Who would you say had the must-see performance of the episode?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I think because everyone's going to say that Betty White is great, and she is. She's a treasure.
I'm bringing you around.
I was never against her. I was just saying, I'm not, like... Oh, geez, now I'm going to get hate mail because of this. No, but I gotta give a shout-out for Alvin for doing the hard work of being the stick-in-the-mud, sourpuss straight man.
And still getting some jokes in.
Yeah, and across from Betty White.
One of the greatest actors of all time, and that's why Betty White is my MSP. Obviously. Must other people see this episode?
Should we just give an honorable mention to the only other two people?
Yeah. Oh my god, this is like the... Sorry, Jack Nars and... Jack... actress that played Chloe Skinflint?
Skinridge.
God, such a gross name.
What a lovely...
Must other people see this episode if they can find it on a dollar store DVD?
It's definitely worth a dollar.
Oh, wait... So you paid actual dollar for this? Or was it one of those dollar stores where it was actually like $3 and it's like, why you called a dollar store?
It might have been $3. I forget now. But like, five. It definitely wasn't... It wasn't $5. Right. Maybe it was $5. I don't remember.
I think it's the... If you are...
I'm looking at it and trying to think, like, how good of a friend do I think of Brett? How much was I willing to spend on it?
Same as a Hershey bar. I think that if you were as into this podcast...
Even at $5... That's a less than dollar per episode value. And if you count by sketch, you're getting
such
nine sketch... Wait, no, six times three.
It's 18.
You're getting 18 sketches.
For $5.
Incidents. 18 incidents in the life of Elizabeth. Really, I don't think there is a better value for money in this day and age.
See, so yeah, if you can find it, it's an interesting historical artifact. I definitely think so. So now we're going to pull from the great TV sitcom book and discuss one of the short-lived wonders contained therein. This is the great TV sitcom book by Rick Mitz, published in 1983, the expanded edition, which means it goes to 1983. For context, this expanded edition ends right as Cheers is beginning.
Ooh.
So that's how out of date it is. And as I said earlier, Rick Mitz has a personality, so there's a little bit of funky flair in all these write-ups. So I'm going to flip and just tell me when to stop, and we will then read one.
Stop.
Okay, so do you want to hear about the Betty Hutton Show, the Dennis O'Keefe Show, Dennis the Menace, Fibber McGee and Molly?
Hmm. Well, I've heard of some of those, but I feel like, I mean, it can't be coincidence that we landed on another Betty.
Oh, Betty Hutton Show?
Right.
Boom, boom. So this is from the 1959 to 1960 TV season. The Betty Hutton Show, Goldie Appleby, played by Betty Hutton, is a lowly but outspoken New York manicurist whose claim to fame is a one-time career as a showgirl. Then one day she files the nails of a lonely but wealthy Mr. Strickland. She accepts his invitation to dinner, then he dies. And soon, inexplicably, she finds herself the beneficiary of his will and executrix of his $60 million estate and guardian of his three orphan children. Episodes of this CBS series dealt with the problems faced by Goldie, the bewildered new director of the Strickland Foundation. Not all the complications of incredible wealth or fun during the show's two seasons.
If I was listening to this podcast, I would now rewind and listen to that again to try to follow what happened.
So she's a manicurist who was once a showgirl. She's filing the nails of Mr. Strickland. So I guess in 1959, males got mani-pedis a lot more. It wasn't as...
Or at least Mr. Strickland.
Mr. Strickland did. I got Mr. Strickland. Fierce. Take care of yourself. So they go on a
date.
And then he died perhaps on the date, but...
Perhaps in the... Did it say that?
Well, it says, like, invitation to dinner, then he dies, and soon, inexplicably, she finds herself the beneficiary of his will.
I love that. Inexplicably is a great thing to put in your explanation.
It's like, hey, I can't figure it out either.
Also, executrix?
I love...
That's wonderful. That's,
So to bring it, like, this is, again, this is The Mick. I keep bringing that up. It's a great show on Fox starring Caitlin Olsen, but that's another show where, like, she, like, is a down-and-out, like, lower class. I don't know how lower-class Goldie Appleby is, but she's in over her head in charge of, like, wealth and three orphan children. So that's what this is, I guess, except she was a manicurist slash showgirl and is also running a company. So that's another wrinkle. Only lasted two seasons.
I feel like that's... I don't know. I'm making a wild guess, right? But that's the sort of thing you can give... You give the character that background so that, like, in the show, you can just sort of throw in, like, oh, well, one time I had this weird job, and that will inform my experience in doing this thing that just came up.
This is a fun thing to then pull jokes from.
Like, that's like a good character thing, right? Where you're like, oh, yeah, I have all these odd jobs. Phoebe and Friends did that, right?
Right, yeah, because she had the crazy past of, like, being homeless,
But I'm saying, like, anytime you needed a character to be like, oh, I totally know someone who does this, or I totally did this thing before.
Yeah.
It could be her, because she believably had this crazy resume.
Well, poor Betty Hutton, in your two seasons of show.
I had a thought while you were reading that, which is that, because it's always seemed weird to me that you would have shows like The Betty Hutton Show, where that name is the actress, or the actor, and the character, like, it's not about Betty Hutton, she's playing a character, and the show is about it's just other people.
Yeah, it's everything. That went out of fashion recently. Because there aren't many the name shows anymore. The last one I can think of, like, The Drew Carey Show. Is that the last one?
Because his name is not his character.
His name on the show, I think, is Drew Carey. But that naming can,
like, Drew something. Because it's a... Honestly, like, Whitney comes to mind, because Whitney Cummings had a show.
But her name on the show was Whitney, right?
Was Whitney something else.
Right, yeah. So they're skating about around it.
Yeah. But I wonder if there's something there about, like, you know, you go to see... Are you watching the performer? Are you going to see a performer, and you don't... And, like, what they're doing is, like, incidental. I don't know. This is too much of a thing for the end of the episode.
Yeah, he played Drew Carey on the show.
Yeah.
But I think that at the time, you are banking on the name of the person. Because, like...
Yeah, I get it. I'm just saying, like, there's something... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. We don't... Let's... Yeah, I don't want to open that can of worms.
I don't know who Betty Hutton was in 1959 in order to deserve a show. Who the fuck was she?
Who does she think she is? Asked first.
She was an American stage, film, and television actress, comedian, dancer, and singer.
Well, Bretton, and she was giving a manicure to a producer, and they went on a date, and inexplicably, she had her own show.
She was in movies.
We just said it, but I gotta say it again. I love, in the middle of an explanation, just being like, and then inexplicably, and just get on to the end.
That's kind of like a yada yada yada. Inexplicably is a yada yada yada.
But literally, inexplicably means, like, I don't have an explanation for this.
So yeah, thank you so much for buying this DVD, funding this episode, bankrolling the whole thing.
Happy to.
Giving an experience to everyone.
Happy to support the arts.
Yes, and the dollar stores around Florida? Pennsylvania?
I think I got New this York? In Queens.
Oh, Queens. Locally grown.
Oh, wow, I should have written stuff.
Locally ago. Grown DVD. Where can people find you online if they want to talk about how great Betty White is?
Benzato on Twitter and other things.
Everywhere.
That's my. I've had pretty good luck in that username everywhere. So
yes.
Also Twitch and ooh. Keybase, GitHub.
What about Peach?
I don't know what that is.
That was one for a little bit.
I don't have that.
Doesn't
now I can think of register as someone else.
Mastodon.
Is that a thing? No.
Yeah, that's Twitter for non Twitter users or something. Listen, I don't know. You know what? Doesn't matter. Thank you so much. And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Ben Rigge, for dropping by and talking about Life with Elizabeth with me this week. Next week on the show, I will be discussing the Taxi episode, Latke's Cookies. Latke's Cookies is in Season 3. It is Episode 8, and you can stream Taxi on Hulu, except for this episode, which you'll have to try to track down, maybe on DVD, maybe somewhere else, maybe someone has an old VHS recording of it, or I don't know. I'm sorry, it's a really good episode. I wish it was on Hulu, but you know what? I do what I can. We'll be talking about that next week. Until then, I want to hear from all of y'all. Please tweet your questions about sitcoms to @MustHaveSeenTV, or you can send them to MustHaveSeenTV@gmail.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr @MustHaveSeenTV. And if you like what you've heard, go on and leave a review on iTunes. If you write a review, I will read your review on the show. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram @BrettWhite. You can read the words that I write at Decider.com. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by the Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting this podcast. Thanks to all of y'all for listening, and I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.